Hey, I'm Ken Pettit.
And I'm Martin Frazier.
And we are Loud Americans Discussing Soccer, better known as
Lads.
Today is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021, and we're back. We took last week off, not really intentionally. Me and Martin, both schedules got a little crazy, end of the shortest month of the year, February. But hey, we're back. It's March. It was, I think, almost 50 degrees in Boston the other day, and then it dropped down to 14 degrees. So spring isn't anywhere close, but hey, the lads are back, so that's all that matters, Martin.
Heck yeah, baby. Spring is around the corner, and the only thing that that means to me is that international break is coming once again. We've had 4 months of literally just straight club football, whatever you want to. Yeah. I remember seeing in November, like, the next international break is in March. We've got so much time. And wouldn't you know it, March is here. March is here to stay. And bro, I am so not ready to watch USA play Panama. You couldn't pay me enough to care about any type of qualifying. Like, we have the Euros this summer. Have we not figured out who's in it? Like, the Euros have been postponed a year. I thought we've already figured this shit out. It pisses me off so much, and I'm not ready to watch stupid ass international soccer again. So Debbie Downer bringing y'all down on this Wednesday afternoon or morning, whatever time you guys are listening.
In good news with that, I believe the UK was saying June 21st fans. That's like when the lockdown in the UK is going to end. So, and apparently the UK is putting a bid to host the Euros. So Martin, you know what that means. It's coming home, baby.
England it's coming home
is winning the Euros. It's coming home physically because the matches will have to be played there. But there might actually be fans in the stand for that as well. So here, we'll make a little silver linings playbook out of that. That's actually really funny because I had to move my car the other day because of the snow, but it was cool because, like, I realized when winter came, like, they weren't cleaning the streets anymore, like the street cleaner. So I knew it was like, mm-hmm. Oh, now I don't have to move my car like once a week anymore. And now I'm like, fuck, it's back now that it's getting warmer out. Now I have to start moving my car once a week, and now I have to start watching international breaks. Cool. This kind
of
like
bad things.
They just kind of coincided with each other and reminded me. But anyway, that's fine. Whatever, international break is it is what it is. And I hate that expression. I think it's the most worthic expression. It is what it is, but it is what it is. Let's move on to the show. We have several games we're going to get to. We're going to talk about Man City's absolute dominance. I'm sick of it, but there's nothing we can do about it. If you're a Man City hater, you hate it. If you're a Man City fan, you're used to it. We got Arsenal. I just want to say before we even get to that part, helping out other people in the top four race by beating Leicester this weekend. We had a Liverpool win. We had Tottenham beating the hell out of Burnley, disrespecting football heritage. That's what happened when Sean Dyche is a national treasure. Gareth Bale decided to play soccer, so that was cool. But before we get into any of that, Martin, this is the lad segment called Discussing Beef. So we got to discuss a beef going on right now, and it's with Zlatan, so go figure. But not Lukaku. It is another major athlete with his name starting with an L, and this is LeBron James.
Dude, it's a weird one. It's like you think of the football gossip, the hot spots in soccer right now, and I don't think a lot of people would go across the pond, pick out LeBron James, and say, yeah, I bet you LeBron James is beefing with some 38-year-old soccer player. So first thing I have to say about it, weird beef. Super odd beef, but
didn't see it coming. If someone would have said 2021, Zlatan and LeBron would be beefing, did not see that coming. Gotta admit.
No, that should have been on the 2020 playlist, but you know what? Here we are, funny 21. And just to give the people who haven't seen this a quick recap, a Spark Notes recap. I don't have the quotes in front of me, so I can't directly quote them.
Well, Mark, I do actually have in front of them. I got the lads Insta open, which again, make sure to follow us because that's where you get all your soccer takes and news. Essentially, Zlatan was being interviewed, I think, by ESPN. It says Discovery Plus, so I think that's ESPN. And the reason he was asked about LeBron James, which is a very weird thing to ask Zlatan Ibrahimovic about, is because Zlatan played for LA Galaxy. So he was known in LA. LeBron now plays for the LA Lakers. So I guess they wanted to get his thoughts on it, but it's just weird asking. First off, again, I don't agree with Zlatan's answer. I kind of understand where he's coming from, but it's a weird question to ask him. Sorry.
Yeah, and I didn't even really consider that. Like,
out of place. Like, I just think it's like, oh, so what do you think of LeBron? And you know what? Maybe Zlatan, like, wanted to put this out, and he said, hey, ask me about LeBron so he can comment on it. Because that sounds very Zlatan. That sounds like something he would do. I have no idea what's going in that guy's head. He's a fucking sociopath. He's a crazy person. But anyway, essentially Zlatan said, I like LeBron. He's phenomenal, but I don't like people of status speak about politics. Do what you're good at doing. I play football because I'm the best at playing football. I'm no politician. If I've been a politician, I would do politics. That's the first mistake famous people do when they become famous. For it's me, it's best to avoid certain topics and do what you're doing. Otherwise, you risk doing something wrongly, which a lot of people took that as shut up and dribble, which is like the trademark.
Laura Ingraham, yeah.
Not only Laura Ingraham, but other people, I guess on the conservative side, who don't like mixing sports with politics, even though, I don't know, we haven't even had people of multiple races being allowed to play in sports for 100 years now. I mean, I think they only allowed, when was Jackie Robinson, like 1940s?
I have no idea. I don't even follow baseball. I'm just saying,
I never liked when people said like, oh, sports and politics shouldn't go together. It's like, well, you've made it that since the beginning of sports. That's what Zlatan had to say on the subject. LeBron put up a response essentially saying like, I won't shut up. It's my platform. I'm going to take care of my community. You know, I feel as though like he felt it was also weird, which I wanted to get to. Is that, you know, and we've talked about this, how Zlatan has essentially been discriminated too because of his last name in Sweden. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, essentially having Ibrahimovic, I think coming from like a Muslim family in Sweden. They're, I'm not going to say like Sweden, I guess they're very, what's the word? All blonde, blue eyes, and they have like
Nazis. Sorry, that's okay. Not the right word. Fuck.
someone bleep that out. I guess that's me. I'm the editor. They all have like Son at the last in their name. They're all very, I don't know. They're trying to go for some type of master thing going on with their race. Let's just say that. So that's what, like, I also felt weird, like, seeing how LeBron commented on that. It seemed like LeBron definitely did a Google on Zlatan before making that statement. And that's what he said, too. I think he said, like, I do my research before putting something out. So, Martin, my take on this is weird beef, really weird beef. I feel like these two people should not be beefing, but here we are. And then second, I think what Zlatan was trying to get at was kind of like, remember when LeBron did that weird thing where he kind of, like, he essentially, Daryl Morey from the Rockets came out and spoke against China.
Then
LeBron came out and not backed China. Obviously, he wasn't backing like the crazy concentration camps in China, but because the NBA essentially makes all their money from like the Chinese market, they didn't want to lose the Chinese market. I guess LeBron tried to play a little PR to fix that situation because essentially they weren't going to air Rockets games in China, and that would have been like billions of dollars of revenue or something. Mm-hmm. So people were calling LeBron a hypocrite, like, oh, you talk about inequality, but you're not defending China, but essentially you're not speaking out against that when someone else is, and you're talking bad about them speaking out against it. So I think Zlatan was saying like, and I think LeBron has kind of reverted to saying like, no, I'm taking care of my own, like my community. Like, I think that was his whole thing. Is like, you know, I'm trying to take care of things going on around me. You can't like come out and say like, oh, I got to fix all the world's problems. But it's a very complicated issue. But I think maybe that's what Zlatan was going for. Like when LeBron kind of got called not an idiot, but kind of like defended China. I don't know what the right word is, but it didn't look good for him when he had those statements.
Yeah, I want to double down on the weird beef comment. Definitely something that I did not expect. And I'm kind of more in the middle ground than you, Kev. We briefly talked about this before the podcast, and I think both camps, you know, LeBron and Zlatan, have points. Because and this is kind of a little aside, but I think that in today's day and age, everybody is so fucking uber involved in speaking their speak. And whether that is used for good or for evil, for political or for business opportunities, everybody does it. It doesn't matter if you're fucking who's that snowboarder, Vaughn, Michelle Vaughn, or if you're an ice skater, or if you're a hockey player, or if you're a soccer player. Everybody has to say something now. And you know what? That can definitely be good, because people are using their voices, their elevated platform, like LeBron, to bring change to their own communities and to speak out against issues abroad. But man, when you have every single fucking person doing it, you can't really say shut up and dribble anymore. So I just do not fucking see the point in telling athletes to shut up and stick to sports when their compatriots, their fucking employers, their owners, the owners of these teams are doing the exact same thing. So why can a businessman speak out but an athlete cannot? There is no fucking difference when the day is over. So LeBron, speak your fucking peace, brother. But on the flip side of things, and y'all might have gathered this from the 200 plus episodes that we have, but I'm more of a liberal fucking person. So I'll tell you what, when I see some conservative, like uber conservative athletes speak out, I'm like, shut the fuck up and stick to sports. So it's that weird biasness where if you agree with someone, you're going to stand by them no matter what. And it's that tribalism. So take Colby Covington, biggest MAGA, biggest fucking Trump buffoon that there was in the UFC. And he used it. And he used it to exploit his personality and to get better fights and get himself to the title fight. And at the end of the day, there are examples of that in liberal circles. So just because I fucking hate Colby Covington and I really hate what he stood for, I fucking think that he should just stick to getting punched and punching. And I'm sure that's the fucking same thing for conservatives. Well, this whole thing is just fucking wild. Never would have fucking thought this would happen in soccer.
Right. My point is is that it isn't a political issue. It's a social issue to me, where Zlatan is saying that social equality for people is a political issue, and that's just a human right that everyone should have.
It is a political issue in today's day and age. I mean, we see it every single fucking day.
Right.
So it has become a political issue. I mean, in theory, it's a social, but shit. I mean, fuck, we live in big fucking banking, big fucking pharma, big government. So everything turns political after a bit.
Yeah, and I just don't like the thought. I really didn't like this from Zlatan, especially as someone who has been discriminatory. I just thought it was very weird for him to come out when, and especially LeBron too. Like, why didn't he come out and say something about what Ozil was supporting? When he was backing China, or not back? I mean, talking out back against in the China. Uters,
yeah.
Or like UNICEF of Barcelona, like other organizations, but he targeted LeBron, which I was just like, that's so weird. I don't know if
it
he just wanted
it back to what you said in the beginning. How did this question come up? Like, this seems like a seriously loaded question where there really wasn't no right answer. I mean, he says one thing, he's going to be lambasted by one side. He says the opposite thing, he's going to be lambasted from the other. So there's no fucking winning game here.
Like, Martin, my thing is like, I'm not putting my tinfoil hat on, but I feel like this was planted by Zlatan. Like, for me, like, all Zlatan had to say is like, what do you think of LeBron? You know, you were a big influence in LA. Now LeBron's here. He's a major influence, because they're both two of the greatest athletes of the past 20 years. All he had to say is like, I love what he's doing for the city. I had great memories in that city, and I hope he does well. Like, that's all he had to say. Instead, he made this into the news cycle now. LeBron versus Zlatan, you know, the King Kong versus Godzilla again, you know, like, made this big thing out of it. So I don't know. I really thought this was kind of out of, you know, poor taste from Zlatan, in my opinion. And I just don't really understand it. Maybe he's just trying to stir the pot a little bit. And he doubled down on it today, saying like, athletes should be athletes, politicians should be politicians. And I don't like the thought that like, oh, I can't have a thought on politics unless I'm a politician. Like, me, Joe Schmo, me, podcaster, me, anybody. Like, oh, for me to talk about sports, I have to be an athlete. Like, me and Martin, me and you aren't athletes, but we talk about sports all the time. I don't like that thought process. I think that's very black and white and very limiting. I really, this kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, but at the same time, I just think it's really weird. So I haven't really fully processed it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I definitely do not think that athletes should just stick to fucking athletics. Politicians should just stick to politics and all that. I mean, if that was the fucking world that we lived in, then everybody would be riding in their own lane and we would have no idea what was going on out there. So I gotta agree with you. It was It was certainly a weird response by Zlatan. Certainly even weirder to double down. But I feel like this is kind of a mess of his own making. Like, at this point, he can't really take back what he said. So I think it's just going to be in the media cycle until it burns out. And Kev, like, you know this better than anybody. 3 days from now, there's going to be something else. Neymar probably has confirmed fucked his sister, and that's all anybody's going to be talking about.
He is definitely out of the second leg against Barcelona. So he's getting down.
Yeah,
my man fucking, he's confirmed out.
This is like 4 years straight since he went to PSG that he's missed out on the what second a
transition.
Leg.
What a transition out of that serious topic. Oh yeah, Neymar's fucking his sister.
Hey, that's just as serious, man. I don't know about you, but
incest is serious.
I need an independent investigation sent down to Brazil and find out if they're fucking. Because if they're fucking, I think that Barcelona would welcome them back with open arms.
Oh my God, step bro, soccer bro.
Step sister. Oopsie, step sister.
I'm stuck. Please, I've heard of those. Okay,
I've heard of those.
I've heard of those videos on the dark web. what was I going to say? Speaking of Barcelona, Bartomeu got arrested.
Chewy, man. We're just jumping to fucking punch to punch to punch. Third one, Bartomeu. Dude, Messi 1000% told the cops where he was going to be at a certain time and like sent 8 cops to use as much violence as possible to arrest this man. I feel like this is Messi's fucking game plan from the get-go. Fuck Bartomeu, and Messi, you can have your revenge, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. Oh my God, yeah, the world's crazy, man. And speaking of like injustices in the world, I saw you tweeting about this, and then I was tweeting about this too, was the 6,500 fucking workers have died making the 2022 World Cup stadium. Yeah. So that's awesome. I remember when we watched that John Oliver special about it like 5 years ago, they said estimates to be around 4,500. Nope, it's 2,000 more, almost a third more. So
that's the craziest shit is,
and we're all going to watch it. You did, yes.
Yeah. I think I tweeted this. The craziest shit is that you and I, like, we don't have any special connections to Qatar, to FIFA, to contractors in Qatar, to construction workers, to electricians, to plumbers. So Kevin and I had no insider baseball knowledge. This was given to us by like BBC Sports or ESPN or what have you. When we originally found out on this. So people have known about this shit for 5 years. People haven't done jack shit for 5 years. And everybody and their mother is going to watch the World Cup in 1 year. And so like, it's just so fucked up. Like nothing changes. Like all these, this goes back to Zlatan's bullshit. And this is where I do think that people like Mesut Ozil, who have really fucking stepped up and spoken out against the really shitty things governments are doing in terms of fucking social injustices. Like the fact that players are totally fucking fine with this, the fact that the FA, the FIFA organization, the Spanish FA are totally fine with this and aren't lifting a damn finger to stop this, to halt this, to change this, it's fucking pathetic, dude. I'll tell you what, if I didn't love soccer so much, I wouldn't watch the World Cup, but I'll be watching the World Cup.
I know, like, I feel dirty, dude. Like,
yeah, like 6,500 like, people dead so we can watch some soccer. How about like, that?
Like, we knew from the get-go that this was corrupted. Like when they decided to do Qatar, like I just don't understand. And like everyone who was involved with that have been arrested or fined. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And we're still like, yeah, right, let's just keep going on. I mean, it's been picked. Like, there's nothing we can do. I'm like, there's a million things we can do.
Yeah, right. Like, other countries have stadiums already built, guys. And like, we don't have to use slave labor to build stadiums. We can just go to Russia, to China, to USA, to Brazil, South America, England, France,
Europe.
Guys, we don't have to go to Qatar. Like, I remember 2 years ago. Guys, after we did South
Africa.
Qatar.
We did one in South Africa.
and the thing with Qatar, they wanted it so bad that they moved the damn tournament 6 months into December, so it would have to take place in Qatar. It's just ludicrous, dude.
Yeah, you know why? Because in the summer, it gets up to like 125 degrees, and that's not even an exaggeration.
No, that's real life. That's a great pick for a soccer tournament where they're running 90 minutes and playing 5 games in 3 days.
They're going to have to take 3 water breaks. during the matches. It's remember so that? Stupid. Like during, when they're playing matches, they had to take like random water breaks, like which again, good. I don't want anyone passing out, but still, like oh my god,
y'all did this. Y'all did this. Y'all
you did this to yourself, and now you're making me feel dirty. Now I feel roped into this, like because like what am I just not going to watch a World Cup? Fuck you. Like no, like
that's the problem. That's like legitimately the problem. Like they know that that the World Cup grosses the biggest global audience ever, every single time it shows. So slave labor or no slave labor, fucking war zone or no war zone, it's gonna fucking happen, and everybody and their mother are gonna watch it, and nothing's gonna change. So can't wait to December 2022, baby, when it's coming home for the second time.
Like will there just be like one news clip about it? Will the commentators mention it? Will anybody I don't understand why this isn't like the biggest issue ever, that the biggest sporting event in the world next to the Olympics and the Super Bowl, imagine if the Super Bowl and like 10,000 people died for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I think we have some issues. I think JJ Watt would make a foundation about it. Like, I don't understand. Like what the fuck? Also congrats to JJ Watt, Arizona Cardinals, breaking news on the podcast. Okay, go on.
I really am fucking devastated by that piece of news. Not the Arizona Cardinals shit. I could care less. The Eagles aren't making playoffs.
Yeah, Eagles suck.
Yeah, I know where we stand. Fucking maybe we'll get third place in the NFC this year. Who knows? But it's just, you know, it shows that these ongoing issues in the soccer world. And one of the things I think it's the third level in the English soccer tier system, one of the teams have stopped kneeling before kickoff because they have said that we've been doing this for fucking 6 months and nothing has been done. They feel like they're being used as pawns to show that you should be equal and kind to each other and not be racist, and racism has no place in football. But there's nothing going on behind the scenes. All they're doing is fucking kneeling. All these players are doing are kneeling and taking a stand, but shit ain't fucking changing. And it's the same thing in Qatar. It's the same thing in fucking China. And it's going to be, it's kind of a fucking shame how this global brand of soccer can and does reach so many people, and the players are the ones that are reaching so many people, but the people who have the real power to change shit behind the scenes ain't doing shit. It's left up to Marcus Rashford, who at 23 years old is knighted and like fed starving kids for a fucking year straight, but you don't see politicians, you don't see owners doing that. So it's a fucking depressing podcast, and Kev, I am depressed.
Right. And back to the whole like kneeling part, I feel as though at first it was setting like, you know, the good message, but I feel as though the players have agreed that they'd rather reorganize and try and like do different ways, because it's kind of like not like the juice has run out, but kind of like I feel as though they want to try something new and do new organizations, different charities, new ways of like spreading equality awareness and, you know, doing like different types of police reform or whatever it might be in their communities. So I think that was kind of what they're getting for. It's like, like we don't want to be used as like our corporate like media. We want to actually make a difference. And, you know, we're going to try and strive to do other things, which I can get behind.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think the teams that were refusing prior, who was it? Was it Millwall or I think QPR scored at Millwall, but Millwall did it like really early and it was kind of like shady. But like I could understand now where players could come out and be like, hey, like we're gonna try something new. It seems it's kind of lost not its meaning, but kind of lost its overall
effectiveness.
That's the word I'm looking for. So thanks, Martin. Okay, so I think our NPR CNN news segment is over. I think we should move on to some soccer.
Heck yeah. Let's talk about what the people want to hear.
So let's start off with the Saturday games. And really, it's just Man City. 2-1 versus West Ham. I got to say, Martin, this Man City team, and they won today against Wolves too, which I guess we'll touch on later. This Man City team is unreal. And I think this is finally, and unless Pep gets too, you know, does the big brain thing where he overthinks things in the Champions League. This team is set up for success and for a long time. Like, looking at how young this squad is and how capable of what they're doing, and if this team gets Erling Haaland, I might just quit soccer, because this team is going to be a fucking problem for a long time, and I could easily see them repeating in the Premier League and having multiple deep runs in the Champions League. And I think they're like PSG, and I know this might be the first time like me saying this, I really do think they're eventually like just going to win a Champions League. They're going to win a European Cup at some point.
Yeah, I mean, over the past 2 months, Manchester City hasn't lost a game. That's just a stone cold fact out there. It doesn't matter how they play or, you know, what the goal difference is. Get that goat. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Had a runaway goat.
I get
but
that.
Yeah, it does not matter how Manchester City performs over the course of 90 minutes. This goes back to how Liverpool was last year, how City was the year prior. It's what champions fucking do. And Pep Guardiola has taken this team, I mean, to just new heights. I thought that they were the better team, the best team in the Premier League in the second half of the season last year. And they are certainly the best team of the second half of the season this year. And they just seem to be getting better. You said that they're set up for success in the future, and damned if that isn't true. I mean, if you go through their squad and you look at the marquee players, you've got Aguero, who is aging. You've got Kevin De Bruyne, who is in his prime. And the rest of them are actually pretty shockingly young. Ruben Diaz, young as shit. Cancelo, young as shit. Foden, young as shit. Baby J, young as shit. Mahrez is in his fucking prime. Zach Steffen, the secondary goalie, young as shit. He's like 23 years old. Then you go to Rodri, and he's only 27 years old. So like you said, this team is set up for success for the next 2, 3, 4 years. And you know, with Pep Guardiola at the helm, funded by the Saudi Arabian oil maestros, the fucking sky's the limit. Kev, I got to agree with you. Yeah, they beat West Ham 2-1 over the past weekend. Beat Wolves today 4-1. I gotta agree with you, man. The title race is over. I think I can say that with certainty now. And I have no doubt in my mind this team is going to be just as good next year. And Kev, it hurts. It really fucking hurts. But good Lord, if they don't win the Champions League this year, shit, they better win it next year, because this is the best Manchester City team that I've seen since the 2017-2018 Man City team, the Centurions.
Right. Like, it's just so crazy that this team can literally beat you in so many different ways. I mean, in this match against West Ham, which I thought West Ham have been absolutely incredible this year. From Suchek to Antonio to Declan Rice, like, the whole squad has been unbelievable, and I thought this was going to be a really competitive match, and for the most part it was. But like, the thing is, like, City isn't reliant on a main scorer like a lot of teams are. Like, obviously, yeah. You take Tottenham, they rely heavily on Kane and Son. I mean, prior to the Bale game that they just had against Burnley. But you take Manchester United, Bruno. There are certain teams that are so reliant, where this team, the two scorers in this match was DS and Stones, and what a comeback of Stones for his career.
Yeah, like, right, dude.
Not that like his career fell off a cliff, but it just felt like we were like, all right, like, that's Stones, like, you know, like, he was supposed to be like this super promising guy, but now paired up with Diaz, like, perfect match. It's kind of like the Van Dijk Matip, you know, or Gomez combination, where like one who's super good kind of does super well with another who maybe less is good, but it is elevated. Yeah, man, it is just crazy to me that this Man City team could just keep going and going and going. Like, they've won, I guess this will be 3 out of the past 4 titles, correct, with this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, man, if they win another back-to-back, I mean, this Man City team is doing stuff that's historic numbers, historic winning, and if they win a Champions League, I said it before, Martin, we're going to have to start putting this Man City squad in that GOAT conversation, as much as it pains you. Because, like, you could always say, like, okay, like, different era, whatever. But, like, if they got the silverware, it'd be hard to deny them, like, in that conversation.
Yeah, if they were able to actually get a treble, I'll see it when I see it.
Exactly. If it happens, it happens.
Jumping on that, and I'll tell you what, Manchester City fans, domestic trebles do not count. The Carabao Cup is not a real cup. The FA Cup is only cool if you get the Champions League or the FA Cup by itself. Yeah,
or if Arsenal wins it.
I got you. I got you, Kev. I got you. If you win the FA Cup and only the FA Cup and you wear a red and white uniform, FA Cup is the bee's knees, the cat's pajamas, the grandma's
pits. It's so good.
It's so good. but I mean, like you said, the fucking, if they've got silverware to back it up, it gets to a point where it's undeniable. And if they're just dominating the Prem and Europe for the next 3 years, which I see increasingly likely, then the undeniable conversation has to take place. But for right now, right here, that's a problem for future me and for future Manchester United fans. And fuck those guys. We'll deal with it when we deal with it. But to jump back to City and Pep Guardiola real quick, I mean, the most interesting thing I think about Pep Guardiola is in his two previous employments at Barcelona and at Bayern Munich, he set both of those teams up for long-term success as well. I mean, you look at Barcelona after he had left, the team that he had brought in were the standard bearers for the next 5 years. And when they started to age and die out, the replacements were never brought in and brought Barcelona into a lot of trouble. Bayern Munich, look at the team that he set up at Bayern Munich. He set that team up for success. And yeah, there was a tumultuous period after he left, as there is to be expected. But Hansi Flick has picked up the reins and the recruiting arms of Pep Guardiola and kind of furthered his vision there. And he's doing the exact same thing at Manchester City right now. And that's the scary part. The fact that he's not set up for success right now, right here, like Liverpool was last year. And they're not set up for success in a once in a fucking dream type story like Leicester City was. They're not even set up for success like Chelsea is, where they have a revolving door of players and managers. Pep Guardiola, I think, has had the clearest vision since he has entered the Prem. I vividly remember, Kev, talking to you when Pep first came into the league saying he's going to be found out. And the first season he was found the fuck out. But I'll tell you what, he went back, he nursed his wounds, and he figured out an entirely new system. And he's implemented it better than any other manager in the Prem. And he is outstanding at what he does, and it shows. He's had one weak year, and it was his first year in the Premier League. Everything else, he's either placed first or second, and shit, man. You got to give credit where credit is due. Fucking keep on rolling Man City.
Right. Like, I think that's just what Pep's always going to be known for, his adaptability. Like, it's unbelievable to think that he came into this league, influenced his style of tiki-taka, being able to, like, score on a whim, realize he had defensive issues, and now this is a defensive-led team. Like, it is quite remarkable. And that's why people are saying, like, oh, Brendan Rodgers, David Moyes. I would still give Pep Guardiola manager of the year. It usually goes to whoever wins the title anyway. Yeah. But I would look at how Pep has redesigned his team to play essentially and win without a good striker as well.
Yeah.
I mean, and Aguero really playing like three games or something, like two games.
Mm-hmm. It's fucking crazy to see. And like, in all honesty, I think that the injuries that have hit Aguero have forced Manchester City's hand, and same with KDB, have forced their hand to get backups earlier than they would have thought they wanted, but it has worked out perfectly for them. All right, Manchester City fans, y'all got a good 5 minutes of me praising your team and your coach, so here it goes. The one bad thing I have to say about Pep Guardiola and his introduction of his tactics into the English Premier League system and, you know, everybody jumping on those tactics, he has made every single fucking team believe that they can play out of the back. It is the stupidest fucking tactic that I have ever seen. Like, Burnley, stop. You have Nick Pope, Tarkowski, just kick the fucking ball. Brighton, kick the ball. If I see David De Gea play another six-yard pass, I'm going to fucking get on a boat and sail my way to Manchester and beat the shit out of the man. Some teams are able to do that. Bayern Munich is. Pep Guardiola's Manchester City is. Sometimes Liverpool is. But I'll tell you what. You can copy Pep as much as you want, and that's probably a fucking good idea to a certain extent. but stop trying to play it out of the back like his team does. Holy shit, that is the worst thing about the Premier League, other than VAR and the referees and flopping and the water breaks. I fucking hate the water breaks.
Well, we're going to get the VAR very soon with Chelsea versus Man U. So I'm very excited to talk to you about that. But yeah, Pep, thanks. Thanks a lot. You got Manuel Neuer to do it. And then you got you created the fallacy that every team must do that. And every team kind of has to do it a little, but not to the degree unless you have the quality of players to support that kind of system. So I don't know. The only other game things I really want to talk about from the Saturday games is poor Brighton. Having like the best XG goals created like they're ever having, but not being able to finish. And they may get relegated. Are Gay Seagulls, Martin?
No, they're going to fucking fight. They're going to fight to the right to Partey. Newcastle is going to take Fulham's spot, and they're going to slip on down, and we're going to have Fulham and Brighton in the fucking Prem next year, somehow, some way. Kev, you, I've been wanting to tweet this for like a good month now. I'm guessing you followed the XG philosophy, or it just shows up on our feed so much now. I have never been so angry at a hypothetical fucking theory before. Oh my god, I don't think the XG philosophy has ever gotten a game right. It is so fucking stupid. Just watch the game.
Oh my god. We've never talked about XG on this show, me and you.
It's so fucking stupid. It is never right.
I never thought about how much you would hate it, and it's so funny to me right now. I'm like snickering. I'm like giggling. This is so funny to me. Wow, yeah.
It genuinely fucking ruins my day every time I fucking get on Twitter and
see it on your feed.
Everton 2.30 to Southampton expected 3.28, but only scored one goal. I have yet to see whoever runs the XG bullshit. People live by that.
There's guys
they should fucking die. No, do not live by that. I cannot tell you something that pisses me off more. No, wait, watch me. If you have, for example, if you're a Manchester United fan and you have United Fanboy 1878 red dot as your fucking your username on Instagram or Twitter, like stop putting English flags in your bio. Stop fucking putting emojis anywhere. Oh my god, I hate expected goals. It's so stupid.
Oh my god. I'm going to put like expected lifespan on your fucking tombstone, like XXL.
It's gonna be lower.
It's gonna be really, really low. It's gonna be West Brom low.
The anger is gonna take a couple years off me life.
I said West Brom, but probably Burnley. Okay. let's move on to Emi Martinez is the best goalkeeper in the league. I'll say
thank you. Yes, sir. I'm so low, dude.
I'm so happy we sold him.
I love Leno and I love Martinez last year. And like Martinez got his shot to fame last year, but y'all might have sold the wrong goalie. Like Martinez is fucking nasty.
Leno, I think, fits better in our squad though. Probably. I know that's a weird, people were like, well, who's the better player? It's like, well, Martinez, I would say, obviously, especially based on the season, but I feel like Leno.
That's a good shot. I like that.
Thank you. It's my way of making myself feel better. Okay. Let's move on to the Sunday games. This is where the real action happened. Let's do it. Arsenal-Leicester. You're welcome, Martin. You're welcome, Liverpool fans. You're welcome, all the original top six, whatever you want to call it, for slowing down Leicester. I mean, poor Leicester. I mean, they're just hurt with so many injuries. But hey, they're not bitching about it like some other clubs. I got to say, I love this Arsenal team so much. It was the, who would have thought, the David Luiz William Pepe game.
I do not understand your
team. They were our Messi, Suarez, Neymar. I don't understand it. I've talked so much shit on William. He did phenomenal this match. I don't understand it, Martin. I really don't I mean, I do love that, you know, Pepe's finally coming out of his shell and performing. And he's been having I would not say a great season. I'll say a very good season this year for us in all competitions. So people are big mad about that. Because every time someone gets a big price tag, rivals just want to see, you know, call them a flop. Like Harry Maguire, I do not consider a flop. I think he was a great signing? I would say no. I say he was a good signing. You know what I mean?
It's that price tag, baby. That price tag fucking ruins it. Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're supposed to be Ronaldo. It's like, no, this is just what the market is now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't understand it. I mean, I thought this game was over in the 6th minute when Tielemans scored. I was like, oh, you know, that's my Arsenal squad being scored on with like 6 minutes in. But hey, Willian, if you want to keep proving me wrong, David Luiz, it's a Chelsea thing. I get it. You guys played well together. Remembering like the old times. Cool. Keep it going. I got to say, like, I was really worried about this match because I thought Leicester was going to beat the shit out of us. No. Did not occur.
No, and I think it was a deserved 3-1 victory. Kev, I got a couple questions for you because, like, I understand Manchester United and the just stupid shit that goes on behind the scenes. So when there's just a shit lineup put out there, I'm not confused. I'm just mad. But what? I got a couple questions about your lineup. What is the resurgence of Mohamed Elneny about? Why does every new manager use the shit out of him for the first like 3 months, forget about him, and then bring him back like a year later? Elneny has made like his third resurgence in the past 3 years. And then is Thomas Partey not the signing that you expected him to be? Because I'll tell you what, I do not see him on the pitch on the Arsenal games that I watch. And I expected a whole lot more.
Well, he's had a lot of injuries. To be fair, he's had a lot of injuries, of course, where he's had zero injury history before, you know, coming on. But, I mean, I thought Partey did very well when he came on in, like, the 66th minute.
I did as well. I'm just shocked he's not starting, man.
No, I think he's coming back from a weird injury, trying to get back into the flow of games. Oh, Nenny has been good. I wouldn't say, again, decent. I'll drop it down to decent for us. Again, like I do think, even though Granit Xhaka has had a better second half, I think we still need an upgrade. I know, but he's a shithead. in the most polite way to say he's a shithead. I took this as more like I just feel very bad for Leicester at the moment because they are really the injuries are really racking up for them right now, and I think Arsenal took full advantage of that. And you know what? I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to get mad. No.
Points are points are points.
Yeah, that's a big 3 points for us. I think we're only 4 points away from Liverpool now, which is awesome. I think we're still sitting at 10th, which is okay.
You are.
Thank you. Overall, I thought it was just such a... I think like when you do a signing like Willian, who gets all the criticism, you can look back at this game like, all right, well, I guess he was kind of worth it for that game. You know what I mean? Like you can be like, all right, he came out and he played really well against Leicester. And we usually do play really. Remember, it reminds me of like when Danny Welbeck got that crucial goal against Leicester those years ago to beat them. Mm-hmm. When Leicester won the league, when I was this is our chance. So I don't know. I was just very very happy with this result. With such a weird, it was a very weird game.
And last thing I'll say about this, Kev, is kind of a commentary on Arsenal's form since I'll say beginning of November. It seems that Arteta, for all the criticism that he got for the first half of the season as well as into December, it seems that he has righted this ship. And granted, it's not flying under full power, but it is not sinking and it is improving. Bit by bit, it is improving with the acquisitions that you guys are getting. Marian in the other center back position, and then obviously Odegaard over this winter period have definitely boosted your squad. I love fucking Cedric as your right back. I mean, fuck Hector Bellerin, the fashion model, to death. So love to see that he's replaced there. And it seems that while Arsenal has periods of like 3 weeks where they're untouchable in January, and then there'll be like a 3 week stretch where they just are, you know, mediocre. And it seems that Arteta is finally getting that more balanced where he's not going on streaky streaks and he's just kind of having a consistent team week in and week out. And so that's fucking great to see for the OG top six club. And you know what, Kev? You know, come the end of the fucking year, this season, this whole season is crazy. You are 6 points behind Liverpool. I think you guys are 7 points off top four right now. There is no reason this Arsenal club could not finish top four the way this season is going currently. Ooh. I mean, Manchester United is shitting the bed hard. Leicester is hurt to fucking death.
Martin, we're 13 points off you, so that is quite a hill to climb.
Hey, we're in second fucking place, and we'll drop like a fly. We used to be 5 points ahead of Manchester City just a month ago, so how the turns have tabled.
Right. And that's what I was going to get to, and I was probably going to bring this up at the end of the pod. Like, who do we think could be in the top four right now? So I'll say that for the end. But yeah, the one through 10 is wild right now.
Yeah,
that it is.
Two through 10. Okay, let's move on to the next match. Tottenham versus Burnley. And I feel like there are a lot of people who hate Burnley. And I get it. I totally understand the style that they play, the Sean Dyche, you know, blue-collared, Patrick Bamford was served a silver spoon, so that's why he couldn't start. I get it. I understand the hate for Burnley. And I feel like everyone and their mother, even if you hate Tottenham, wanted to see Burnley shit pumped. And Gareth Bale, from the second minute in, it was the Gareth Bale show. Son delivered an amazing cross. Next, you know, Gareth Bale is delivering amazing passes to Harry Kane to slot it away. It was just I think for Tottenham fans, this is what they imagined what it would have been when they first signed Bale in the summer, or I guess got the loan. But this was truly like, it felt like a prime Bale game, this match. And it just seemed like it was really nice to see the Welshmen having fun out there on the pitch. And Burnley just had no fucking answers for Tottenham. They were just being overwhelmed.
Yeah. And you know what? Football is such a fucking crazy sport, because for the past 2 years, maybe even closer to 3 years, everybody, including myself, have really been talking shit about Gareth Bale. Golf, Wales, Madrid, in that order. Everybody remembers that. And everybody was kind of fucking making fun of him this entire year for shit in the bed and really not getting into the starting 11. Jose Mourinho was fucking bad-mouthing him in pressers and everything. And Gareth Bale gets on the field and just wallops Burnley's fucking worm-eating ass. And that's the fickle thing about football. You can be dog shit for a year straight, and then you just have one game, and it changes everything. And I hope that this is this game for Gareth Bale. I would absolutely love to see Gareth Bale go on a tear for the rest of the season, convince Tottenham to bring him back for another year. It's good for the sport. Gareth Bale is decent for the sport. He's very talkative. Yeah, he's great for the fucking Prem. And if he performs like that, shoot, man. That's just more fun for me, because, look, we talked about this like 3 weeks ago. I'm done ever considering Tottenham a title contender, a trophy contender. I'm just enjoying their football now. So if I can see Gareth Bale perform like that week in and week out, if I can see Harry Kane banging some fucking goals, Heung-min Son make some streaking runs, Lucas Moura waste his fucking energy on the right side of the ball, I'm about that. I'm fine with that. And so this was a fun game for me. I mean, I'm a huge Sean Dyche fan. I'm a huge Nick Pope defender. So I was rooting for them, obviously, and I like to see the top teams stumble. So I was rooting for Burnley, so this game hurt. Mourinho is so fucking weird, man. They're either so good or so bad. And he's done it with Manchester United, and now he's doing this exact same thing with Tottenham. They're either so good or so bad, and you have no idea what you're going to get week in and week out.
Right. I feel like this was the match where it's been, I don't mean to use the word bottling, but bottling up for Tottenham. Like, I really didn't mean to do that, Spurs fans. I'm sorry. Please, I didn't mean to do it.
He didn't. Like, he meant to sauny it up. Jeez.
It was coming to a boiling point. Does that sound more of a sense? And it felt like there needed to be a release. Yes, sexual innuendo, do it. What I'm saying is that I feel like it felt like this was Tottenham were due. You know what I mean? Like a degenerate gambler, like you've been hitting wrong bets all the time. Like they were due. And yeah. It just happened to be Burnley. It makes sense it was Burnley. And for everyone who hates Burnley, their football heritage and what they represent, yeah, I mean,
do you play for Burnley? If you don't, then you can't talk shit.
Hey, Burnley stays in the Prem.
That's right.
That's
exactly right.
They do what they do to survive. They know who they are, and you got to respect it. Hey, Sean Dyche is the perfect manager for Burnley. I could never imagine another manager for Burnley.
I really do think that that is a huge fucking thing that we do have to point out, that Sean Dyche has kept this Burnley team in the Premier League for approximately 5 years now.
And, is it 5 years?
I think so. I'm guesstimating there because I'm not about to Google it. So it speaks to his fucking talent as a manager, and you know everybody is jumping on Bielsa as a manager too, and you do what you got to do when you're a low level team to survive, whether that means conceding 4 goals and scoring 5 goals in Bielsa's case, or putting 9 players behind the ball at all times in Sean Dyche's case. You know, results speak for themselves. Nobody is going to remember in 20 years from now that Burnley was a defensive machine. They're going to remember them in the Prem, though. I'll tell you that much.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what it comes down to.
Like Martin, like, to me, if Leeds has had a fantastic season, I can't deny it, based on them coming out of the championship, they play this crazy, wild, you know, high press, energetic, run till the 90th minute football. But if they get burnt out, say next season, they get relegated, Burnley remains, I feel like Sean Dyche is going to be laughing his ass off.
Absolutely.
He's going to take that home to the bank and be like, all right, cool. You did your fucking crazy style that can work for clubs of much more talent. But hey, I'm still here. I remain. Mm-hmm. I will always remain.
This is the way.
This is the way, baby. Okay. Now, let's get to the big match of Saturday.
Sticker.
Chelsea versus Man U.
Sticker.
Martin, what is it with Man U and shitty Big Six games?
All right. What? It's not just us. I read this article.
It feels like it is. It probably not just you, but I just feel like it's you.
I read this article after the game, and it was some fucking, I think it was the Mirror. So take it as what you want.
Trash.
Yeah. But it compared all of the Big Six, the traditional Big Six clubs, and their head-to-head meetings, and their goals scored, their goals allowed, their points against each other. And Manchester City had obviously done the best against the other top six clubs. And then I think it was Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham. And the bottom two performers in that list are Manchester United in fifth and Chelsea in sixth. And if you remember back to November of 2020, the Chelsea-Manchester United game, for all the hype that it got, Frankie versus Ollie, and it was dog shit. This game was no fucking difference. I knew this game was going to be a fucking stinker. I told Gabe, I sent this in the group chat that we have. I would have rather it been a 4-3 loss than a 0-0 draw, because it just seems that when Manchester United comes to play these Big Six teams, they are scared. Leicester is a perfect fucking example of play your game no matter who you're playing. And Leicester has never played up or down to an opponent. And that's what I think that Chelsea and Manchester United are missing, and what this game are missing. There was a coyness to them. And there wasn't that fucking hatred, that passion, that love on the pitch, like you expect there to be in just a iconic game like Chelsea versus Manchester United. Obviously, there's always going to be passion in Liverpool versus United, City versus United, but Chelsea versus United is a huge match. And so, once again, this game disappointed the shit out of me, individually and as a team effort, tactically and individual performance was disappointing. I mean, Manchester United only made one substitute. I don't care if you're up 4-0 or you're down 3-0. Use your fucking substitutes, Ollie. Well, Thomas
Martin,
Tuchel.
But before you get too into it, and I feel like as though there's people like steaming right now listening, we haven't even mentioned the biggest controversy of the match.
It's not a handball. Let me throw a addendum to that, a caveat, an asterisk to that. And in today's day and age, that's a handball through and through. To me, that's not a handball. I mean, there's that ball is coming at them so fast, it's juggling around. That's not a handball to me. I'm fine with that not being called a prem or a PK, but the question of consistency remains. I mean, everything and its mother is a penalty nowadays. That's a handball penalty in any other fucking game. So, it's a penalty by the new age rules, But I'll tell you what, I did not feel hard done by the non-penalty call.
So the argument, I think the Robbies and, they were making in the booth was that, you know, the two players were jostling for each other's arms. So both of them moving each other's arms, trying to like grab at each other for the ball. Hudson-Odoi's arm wasn't above his shoulders, which was like a weird thing I didn't even think about. I don't know. When you have to start getting into the nitty gritty of it, I started to just start to tune out. Because then I'm just like, just play on. Just I don't care anymore. But yeah, I could see that going either way. But my question is, what do you think about the on-field stuff where, what's it called? Luke Shaw came out in Sky Sports afterwards saying that Harry Maguire said he went up to the ref and the ref was like, VAR said it was a penalty, but I was thinking about the backlash, but now Luke Shaw and Harry Maguire have come back and said, oh, that's not true. Like I misheard him or something like that. That was a whole giant thing. And now Man U fans saying like, oh, people are against us getting penalties when before people were saying we were getting too many and felt like under pressure. It just feels like it's just, this should have all just been a non-issue. And it's just the media and Twitter and everybody just blowing this out of proportion.
Yeah. And I think that you hit the nail right on the head right there. And to be honest with you, I mean, Kev, as long as you've known me, and as long as you've known me as a Manchester United fan, I really don't fucking jump to these types of decisions where I'm saying this guy needs to be fired. I'm saying there's a conspiracy against us. I hate that bullshit. I think that's new age fucking fandom. And so, yeah, you know what? Luke Shaw, he had his interview with Sky Sports. He said that the referee said that it was a handball, but I didn't want to face the backlash. Harry Maguire came out, said that's not exactly what he said. I'll tell you what I don't give two shits about.
I'm exhausted. It exhausts me. I don't care.
I do not care. I'll tell you what I care about. The fact that if we were more attacking, or if we didn't play two center defensive midfielders, maybe we could have scored a single fucking goal from open play. I'll tell you what, do not rely on a damn penalty kick, regardless of how obvious or non-obvious it is. There were so many other issues with that game, so many other issues with individual performances from Bruno Fernandes, from Marcus Rashford, to, I mean, the only player that I really fucking liked how he performed was Victor Lindelof and Mason Greenwood. Everybody else had a meh fucking game. So Luke Shaw, look to your fucking teammates first. I'll tell you what, I could care less about the is that a handball or non-handball. I care the most about it being a 0-0 draw because both teams on both sides of the game could have scored, should have scored based on their individual talent. And they just didn't. Thomas Tuchel does this bullshit fucking diagonal or lateral passing that really doesn't get you anywhere near the goal. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer really just relies upon the creativity of one midfielder to supply the balls to the forward attacking players. And it just does not fucking work. And it's obvious. I mean, look, I've already bitched about Manchester United. I'm going to bitch about Chelsea for a second. Thomas Tuchel is undefeated, yes. But I'll tell you the fuck what, that is not impressive at all when you actually look at the teams that he has played and the results that he has taken. This man has had more draws than wins. This man's biggest competition or biggest challenge was Atletico Madrid, where they put 10 men behind the ball and they got a penalty kick. Giroud bicycle. So I'll tell you what, I am not impressed by either of these fucking teams. I am certainly not impressed by the focus that Manchester United is putting on the referees or penalties. I'll tell you what, this goes back to, you know, UFC boxing. Don't put it in the judge's hands. Knock his ass out. Finish the fight before the fucking bell rings. Do not rely on a penalty, whether it's called right or wrong. Do not rely on that. So I do not agree with the bulk of Manchester United fans who are hating on the referee, who are backing Luke Shaw for this shit. Score, and you don't have to worry about this shit. Do not rely on a penalty. And I'll tell you what, the penalties, you know, the penalty comments that have come from other fan bases throughout this entire season, you guys get way too many pens, yada, yada, yada. I'm embarrassed by that shit. That shit pisses me off so much. That it pisses me off so much because I know my team is better than relying on penalties. So to hear my team say we should have had the penalty, we should have won the game through the penalty, it's disappointing as shit. So I have no sympathy. I don't think that's a fucking handball, to tell you the honest truth. So I'm disappointed. I'm pissed off at Manchester United, at Rashford, at Bruno, at Scott, at Fred, at everybody. So yeah, there's no excuse.
I almost think it's almost like a psychological thing too, that maybe since the 6-1 with Tottenham, and not to bring up bad memories, that going up against the big six, he gets a little skittish and wants to play more safe. Mm-hmm. So maybe something like that doesn't happen again. So what do you think about that?
And yeah, I think that's a great point. But I mean, you go to other competitions, and I think it comes down to the pressure and the expectations. You go to the FA Cup. We played Liverpool in the third round, knocked their ass out handedly. But then you go to Liverpool in the league 3 days prior, and it's another fucking 0-0 stalemate draw. So I think that definitely has an aspect of truth to it. And whether it's the full fucking story or not, I don't know, but I'll tell you what. This current tactic against the top sides as well as the bottom sides, because we play the exact same against the bottom sides as we play against the best sides, which is it's super fucking weird. But I think that there certainly needs to be a investigation into tactics during these huge games. And I'll tell you one more thing, Kev, and this goes to the Manchester United fans out there. If you guys are calling for Ollie out, I've already said this probably three times this year. I think I've said this three times this year. Stop. Oh my God, stop. We are in second place. We were top of the league for 2 weeks. There is obviously a positive growth. Stop calling for everybody to be sacked after a bad run of form. Oh my God. It is sickening.
Chill. Relax.
Chill. Holy shit, chill.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel as though you are this summer transfer window from being title
contenders.
At least contenders. Yes,
true contenders.
This year there was you are a little bit contenders. I think next season, if you get a good transfer window, bring in the right pieces, because some club like Arsenal, I feel like they're at least three transfer windows away.
Agreed.
Where I feel as though Man United, they finally have some of the right pieces good to go. So, and Chelsea, I think Chelsea, even though I know they have so much money and no one talks about how much is on their bench, but everyone talks about Man City's bench. I think Chelsea are right there with you guys. It's just getting over that Man City mountain is still going to be really fucking hard.
Yeah. So, especially over 38 games of that Manchester City mountain. And Kev, one quick thing about that, the Chelsea bench, just because I've been seeing it circulating just so often. I think that kind of goes back to the Pepe and Harry Maguire comments that we were making earlier. If you look at their bench and if you look at the actual talent on their bench, it's not that talented. If you look at the price tag of their bench, it's huge. It's 252 million, I think.
I posted it the other day on Lads. Let me see. Yeah. Keep talking.
I think that the talent compared to the price is astronomical, and I think that it's more of a result of bad transfers than just having a stacked bench. And look, nobody fucking ever said that Chelsea is not funded by some Russian super billionaire. We've all known that since 2003, 2004. Yeah, we know that, guys. We are aware of that. But they are not at that Manchester City PSG level of oil yet.
In other news, Manchester United 2017-18 did well this weekend. Inter Milan's goal scorers were Lukaku, Darmian, and Sanchez.
Manchester United 2017. That's fucking good. Well, I'll tell you what. I do not consider Alexis Sanchez to ever be part of Manchester United.
Oh, no. Don't you dare. He did that.
You know I never wanted him. You know, Martin, I never wanted him. I never wanted him.
He did that piano thing. You remember his intro video. Don't you dare. That iconic piano introduction, which was the
weirdest. That was the best thing he did for my club. He had a piano introduction. He scored like 2 goals since. And I'll tell you what, Big Rom is the only one I missed. Fucking Ashley Young.
I forgot about Darmian, to be honest.
Darmian's fucking gone. And he's the only fella on AC Milan. And so I'll tell you what, man, I don't miss any single one of them except Big Rom. I'll tell you what, dude, I would fucking love to have Romelu Lukaku back in my club. I think that
his touch is better. It's weird.
His touch is better. And I'll tell you what, we still need 2 years later, a center fucking forward. Big Rom would have been perfect, but yeah, no, what you going to do?
Okay, let's wrap this stuff up. Liverpool won against Sheffield United. Curtis Jones scored again. I don't really take anything from that game too much. It's Liverpool versus Sheffield United. I just would hope they would beat them. Yeah. Weirdly enough, it's Curtis Jones and an own goal. Like, you look at 2-0, you're like, oh, who would have scored that? I mean, they're finally getting a goal from someone who's not Salah. So good. That's very good.
Improvement.
And then the only other game I was going to mention was Everton. Everton with the big Carlson goal to put them in, what is it, seventh. But tied with Liverpool and only 2 points out of the top 4. So, hey, shout out, Leicester, West Ham, Everton, and Villa. Even though Villa is very inconsistent, and they're ahead of Arsenal. So again, Arsenal are also very inconsistent. They are not playing like a big six team this year. But I got to say, Everton, West Ham, Leicester, if there was a 3-way split of manager of the year, I think they should all have an equal grab of it, because what they're doing for this club this year has been phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the Evertonians, the villains, and the, I mean, everybody, in all honesty, from sixth place on, whether it's the Aston Villa, Everton, Leeds United, or West Ham, it's shocking. It's great to see, and it kind of speaks to the topsy-turvy season that we have been having. But, you know, up until Manchester City pulled away by 12 points, I was having a blast with this season. It was the most fun season that I've had in quite some time. So huge shout out to Everton. Huge shout out to Rick Carlson. James Rodriguez, I'll tell you what, he is not the fucking mastermind of that Everton team. I think that it's impressive that it is still the likes of Tom Davies, Decore, Michael Keane, Luca Digne, Seamus Coleman, for God's sakes, Rick Carlson, and Calvert-Lewin that are really fucking pulling this team forward.
Sigurdsson,
yeah, he's making a huge fucking comeback under Ancelotti. He was kind of frozen out of the squad in the first half of the season. But, man, this Everton team, I really don't know why I doubted Carlo Ancelotti. I mean, shit, dude. Like, this shit is impressive. If he finishes top 6, that's impressive in itself. If he finishes top 4, that's dumb impressive. Same goes to the fucking villains. They've lost 2 of their best players. They've got Jack Grealish out with shin splints, which are an absolute bitch. I'll tell you what, I've only had them like 3 times in my life, but you always kind of scoff at shin splints, but holy hell, it's a whole different type of pain. No, and then you have John McGinn out as well. So, you know, the villains crushing that shit still. Love to see that. Love Jack Grealish. Can't wait till he's on my team. But hell yeah.
Oh my God! Still a pipe dream or going to happen?
Well, Kev, I'll tell you what. Like Manchester United at Manchester United, if you have been listening to me ramble at all for the past 3 years, I've been identifying perfect transfer targets for you guys, and you guys, for the most part, are just ignoring me. They're just ignoring me, Kevin. I don't know why they hired me.
I don't get it either. But hey, that's our show, guys. Spring is around the corner, so I hope you all start looking like Fernando Torres soon. If you haven't seen him, that man is fucking yoked. That man is jacked. I need to get on his plan, and I hope you all start getting ready for your summer bodies. Or if you love your body, sure, that's probably great too. I don't know. I don't want to end up saying something dumb like Zlatan, but He actually kind of said something really dumb. Anyway, that's our show, guys. We love you. We'll probably be back later this week on Friday. And yeah, take it easy.
Bye.
I'll be your dream. I'll be your wish. I'll be your fantasy.
I'll be your hope. I'll be your love. Be everything that you need.
I love you more with every breath. Truly, madly, deeply do. I will be strong. I will be faithful. Cause I'm counting on a new beginning. A reason for living. A demon in it. I wanna stand with you on the mountain. I wanna bathe.
To remember you on the cry, the tears of joy.